Second case for argument this morning is Appeal 07-1756, Michael v. Griesbach. Mr. Huff. Okay, Mr. Huff.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I am attorney Brian Howe. I represent the defendant, Ms. Dana Griesbach. Ms. Griesbach has appealed the district court's conclusion that she was not entitled to qualified immunity. Ms. Griesbach should be granted qualified immunity because at all times her actions were objectively reasonable under the totality of the circumstances. Because her actions were objectively reasonable under the totality of the circumstances, her actions were consistent with the Fourth Amendment. It's important to understand that this case is not analogous to Doe versus Heck. Significant reliance was placed on Doe versus Heck by the district court as well as the plaintiffs in this case. There are several key distinctions which must be emphasized. Unlike in Doe versus Heck, there was a clear, objectively reasonable basis from which Ms. Griesbach, the child welfare agent, suspected child abuse on both Ian and Alexis. In this case, Ms. Griesbach was informed by a family member that a child was whipped by a plastic stick, whipped on his wrist, leaving a mark. Ms. Griesbach acted reasonably by investigating. She contacted the family member, asked questions about it. Ms. Griesbach spoke with her supervisor, and then Ms. Griesbach went to the school of Ian to follow up and to conclude her investigation. When she arrived at the school, she was polite, she was professional, and she was courteous. This was a private school, so Ms. Griesbach asked the receptionist if she could speak with the principal. The receptionist brought Ms. Griesbach to the principal, and Ms. Griesbach and the principal had a conversation. Ms. Griesbach told the principal that she was there to see Ian, to see Alexis, and that she was there to investigate child abuse. The principal even noted that it was obvious that Ms. Griesbach was there to investigate child abuse. After all of this was obvious to the principal what Ms. Griesbach was there to do, the principal went and retrieved Ian and brought Ian into the principal's office, left Ms. Griesbach in the office with Ian privately, and shut the door.
Why wasn't the principal allowed to stay?
There are several reasons why a child welfare agent...
No. Why wasn't the principal allowed to stay in this case?
The child welfare agent has an interest in doing all the...
I understand that. Child's getting interested. Why wouldn't the principal be? Don't you think the principal had any interest in the child's welfare? The child was placed in the principal's care by the parent. It's a private school, isn't it?
Correct.
Why wasn't the principal allowed to stay?
When multiple individuals are involved in the investigation, it compromises the privacy of the investigation.
Of the investigation?
As well as the interests of the child.
Well, the child's privacy is being rather superbly set to one side. Child's privacy is, if you're taking your theory correctly, just forgotten about. What we're worrying about now is how does the integrity of the investigation get threatened by the presence of the principal, who is the one that the parents have given the custody of the child to? Was there a suspicion that the principal had beat the hell out of the kid or what?
The allegation was that the parents had whipped the child repeatedly.
I understand. The allegation that the parents beat the kid soft. What's wrong with letting the principal stay there?
It's important in child abuse investigations. I'm not unfamiliar
with child abuse investigations. For several years, I was in charge of prosecuting child abuse cases when I was a state prosecutor as an assistant, and I know how they work. But I want to know, one of the rules we always had, you've never investigated without somebody else present while you were doing it. That was a flat-out rule for a bunch of reasons. One of them is you didn't get sued as often. The other reason, we get to see what happened. And I want to know what in this case made it imperative for the principal not to be allowed in.
Generally, in this... Oh, sorry, not generally. Whenever there are multiple people involved, there's less...
There are multiple people, too. It's not a crowd. We're not calling in the entire faculty to bear witness or anything. Just two.
The agent told the principal that it would not be necessary to sit in on the investigation.
She did a little more than that. She didn't want her to sit in.
If the agent can do whatever she can to maintain the privacy interests of the child, then that's what she would do.
She's about to strip search the child. Well, and she's concerned about the privacy of the child? Why would the presence of the principal violate the child's right to her privacy rights?
Wouldn't violate the child's privacy right. More people who are involved in the investigation provides less privacy.
It also might provide somebody who could testify differently than the social service worker in what they found. And that's not a bad thing, is it? Two points of view?
Certainly from different points of view, if you have another person present in the room, then that would provide some...
You know, one of the reasons we provide a lawyer can be present when there's a lineup is to prevent a bad finger. Not so he can say anything, but just observe and see what happened. What's wrong with the same situation for 10 years? Social servicer wants to see the child and has, at least I'm willing to answer you to this stage, to give him a right to do a search, but I want to know why it has to be done secretly, where only the social service worker dashes in and says everybody else out, when the child is placed in the care of a private school principal. Private or public, it wouldn't make any difference to me. It seems to me that I can't see any reason why it has to be done so secretly.
Your Honor, at all times, the principal had the opportunity to tell Ms. Gressbach that she didn't want to allow this investigation to proceed.
Did the principal know she could tell the social service worker to butt out? Or was she told, I'm going to examine a child privately, hit the road?
The principal never objected.
She didn't want to stay. It was my understanding from reading this, she indicated she wanted to stay.
Questions were asked by the principal, but the principal never said, well, if this is going to be behind closed doors, then I don't want this investigation to proceed. Instead, Ms. Reitz, the principal, went and retrieved the children, brought them into the private room, and shut the door.
But wasn't she told by your client that she had a legal obligation to comply with the investigation? And she took your client at her word that she did have that legal obligation?
I do not believe that that was...
Wasn't the statute cited? Didn't she bring up the subject of the statute in question in this case? And in Heck, same statute, right?
I do not believe in this case the record reflects that Ms. Gressbach cited a statute and instructed the principal that she had no choice but to go and retrieve the children. There was a conversation between Ms. Gressbach and the principal. Ms. Gressbach said that she was there to see the children, to do a child abuse investigation, and a couple of questions were asked, but Ms. Gressbach did not say, you have no choice, you have a legal duty to comply. That wasn't her, those weren't her words.
What were her words?
And the record reflects that that Ms. Gressbach said, I'm here to see the children, I'm here to do a child abuse investigation, and and that's what the record reflects about the conversation. There was also some discussion about generally how mandatory reporters function in this context, and that a mandatory reporter will, if they have evidence of child abuse, then this is how you report it. There was a lot of discussion about that, but Ms. Gressbach did not tell the principal that she was legally required to do everything that she said.
There was a discussion about the law in this area, though, wasn't there?
I believe.
And wasn't there testimony also from the principal that she felt that she had a legal obligation based on that discussion to retrieve the children and permit the investigation?
Ms. Reitz had did testify that that was what she thought.
Based on the conversation about mandatory reporting under Wisconsin law and so forth.
I don't think it's clear that the record reflects that that was the basis of her understanding. Ms. Reitz had a very limited understanding, apparently, of issues relating to child abuse investigations. But I don't believe that that is the key issue in this case. When you're dealing with consent and scope of consent questions, the scope of consent is judged from the standpoint of an objectively reasonable person in the position of Ms. Gressbach. What would an objectively reasonable child welfare agent have understood about the conversation between the principal and the agent? And when the agent said, I'm here to see the child and do a child abuse investigation, a couple of questions were asked, and that was it.
Here's what she said, your client said. It was her practice not to allow anyone into the room when she conducted her interviews, and the Bureau had an absolutely no standard with respect to such matters. She said that it was not her practice to ask permission, just to tell him she was going to do it. It was also her practice not to allow anybody in the room. I want to know, under what theory did she can keep the custodian of the child out of the room when she's doing an examination? I'm perfectly willing to agree with the right of the examination. It's absolutely necessary. But what right does she have to keep either the parent or the guardian out of the room?
If the question is what lawful authority did Ms. Gressbach have to prevent the principal from entering the room, I think that's a difficult question to answer.
Yeah.
But I don't think she forced her to stay out of the room.
She didn't beat her up. She said, your presence is no longer necessary. Hit the road. You're in your rebuttal time. It's all my fault. So
all right.
I yield.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Crampton.
You'll concede, won't you, Mr. Crampton, that the age social service worker had a right to examine the children?
Depends what you mean by examine, Your Honor. A right to interview? Yes. A right to conduct
a search?
A
right to interview and examine to find out whether there was any evidence of abuse. Is it your unequivocal position that they had no right to conduct an examination to see if there were physical signs of abuse?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
Okay.
No, we understand they are charged under the law. Child abuse is a serious problem. We do not mean by any stretch of the imagination to belittle those very serious needs of our society.
Good. However, then you haven't lost me so far.
I'm glad. What we are concerned with here is not just what Ms. Grisbach actually did in the context of this investigation, which was bad enough, but also the authority that she claims here, which is basically unlimited. There was, in the reply brief,
unlimited?
Yes, I'm trying to explain. The notion of strip search, let me begin by explaining this.
I don't know how you can look for physical abuse without strip search.
Your Honor, it is not so much that they have absolutely no right to conduct a strip search. Again, right. It is the manner in which it is conducted.
You mean they tore the clothes off or frightened the child or what?
It is a question of fundamental bodily integrity, obviously, when you are investigating and physically examining the bodies of these minor children. Consequently,
what is the strip search here?
Okay.
You're saying a strip search, and that term has been bandying around quite a bit here.
That's exactly where I was heading.
If someone has a sweater on and you have them roll up their sleeves so you can see their arms, or roll
not
up their pants
search.
So you can see
that. Correct.
That's not a strip search.
Correct. But let me first state that the standard here is not, as Ms. Grisbach has suggested, that is the state statute of Wisconsin. This is a federal civil rights case. The concept of strip search is governed by federal law. In the federal context, the rule is when you are required to remove clothing, it doesn't have to be every item of clothing, and expose private areas of your body. When you're stripped down to your boxer shorts, that's a strip search.
What happened
in federal law? They were stripped down to their boxer shorts or their panties. That's what happened here. And back to His Honor's question, with regard to no presence of the principal, no checks whatsoever on the manner in which the social worker conducted her investigation here. It was carte blanche. Close the door, wait out there. I do with these kids what I deem appropriate in my sole unbridled discretion. That is unconstitutional. Again, the question of the extent of the problem does not operate to justify a complete, as they attempt to argue here on appeal, special needs kind of exception to the Fourth Amendment.
I understand what your position is. I had understood your position to be, first, there was no consent, period.
That's correct.
Is that still your position?
Well, yes, it is, Your Honor. However, we did not appeal the denial, the ruling on the initial interview aspect. So that is not before this court. We're not making that argument here.
So there's no argument about consent at all?
No, sir. There is indeed argument about consent. Whether an implied consent to come in and conduct an interview, an oral interview, somehow transmogrifies into consent to conduct unbridled strip searches.
You know,
two different
all,
issues.
Almost all arguments can be reduced to absurdity, and you're doing that. They're trying to find out whether the child has been abused.
Yes, sir.
They have some reasonable way of doing it.
Yes.
The only thing I'm concerned about
is what that is.
Is why they won't let the principal present when it happens. The fact that they can do it, you seem to think is a terrifying proposition. I don't think it is. Now, if you can convince me that it's a clear violation of somebody's constitutional rights to have a child examined when there's a legitimate reason to believe that there was...
That's the issue, Your Honor. What was the legitimate reason? What we have is a broad allegation here. Counsel uses the term whipped. That, of course, was not the term below. The term was either hit or, in effect, you have a spanking here. You had a mark, according to the best evidence they can produce, on a wrist.
Okay.
By the time the agent saw the child, no mark.
Okay. There's good and bad child abuse allegations. Obviously, we know that. And this is a typical example of somebody in a family. It's a stepfather, that kind of situation. So the family on the outs says this kid's being abused and beaten. It seems to me these social workers are in a terrible situation. We have cases where social workers get sued because they have not aggressively investigated child abuse.
Understood.
Now here, as I understood your brief and your main argument until Judge Bauer went into the fact that the principal wasn't present, good point. But I didn't see that that was stressed by you.
It was
that there was no consent.
That's correct.
And, I mean, you were the attorney who argued Doe versus Heck.
Yes, Your Honor.
So you know that case.
Yes.
And what happened in that case was so completely different than what happened here. Permission denied. Calling the police to come in. I mean, you didn't have anything like that here.
That's
here you
true.
Have somebody coming in. I'm investigating child abuse. I'd like permission. I want to see this child. See the child.
Yes.
And when I hear I want to see a child for a child abuse investigation, that means I just don't want to see their face. I want to see them. Now, that's how I viewed this. And
again, there are very distinct legal analyses that attach to the initial seizure and, of course, the search when you're removing clothing. And the standard, I think, is very specific. Going back to Doe v. Heck, which I would contend, Your Honor, contrary to His Honor's suggestion, is actually much more similar than may be the case at first blush. But what it said is, absent court order, exigent circumstances, or probable cause, you must have consent or else. Patently unreasonable. Ms. Griesbach is desperately contending here that that standard needs to be changed. And by the way, that standard goes back to Brokaw, at least, by, issued from this court. It's not new with Doe. Consequently, we must first examine what was the case concerning consent. It is undisputed that Ms. Griesbach never explained, despite a lengthy conversation with Principal Reitz, that she intended to engage in this kind of strip search. Second, she never asked permission for the first interview. So what you have is the fact that the principal opened the door and let him in to interview. How could any reasonable individual, social worker or otherwise, think that that somehow conferred authority to conduct a strip search here? It did not. So what we are saying is you must have then, even under the Daryl H. standard, definite and articulable evidence. You did not have that.
Your definition, though, you're applying and saying that what happened here is a strip search.
Yes.
I mean, you were here for the prior case that we had where police removed a container of crack cocaine from somebody's buttocks. Or
yes.
That's a strip search.
Yes.
Under the law, I don't know that this is necessarily a strip search.
I think the case is,
have to take off your shirt, you're saying that's a strip search?
Yes. Exposing the areas, private areas of your body, right down to your boxer shorts.
Is that the private area of your body? People
when you're dropping
go swimming
your pants, I notice everyone in this room is fully clothed, Your Honor. We don't come in here in our skivvies, and there's a reason for
you
that.
You haven't the smallest idea what I've got on under this wall.
I withdraw the comment, Your Honor.
Are you saving some time for...
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. Am I into his time?
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Dean.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have 3 brief minutes in the sun, but I was going to comment about the distinctions with Alexis because that's who I represent in light of the questions I'm going to... go a different direction. In general, of course there's a right to investigate. There's a right to investigate crime. But the Fourth Amendment, and Doe versus Heck settled that, is applied reasonably under certain circumstances. The right to investigate is not unlimited. Doe says that the right to investigate extends only so far as there is consent, probable cause to believe a crime has been committed or is being committed, and Dana Griesbach herself said that she was...
Don't you think the investigation by social service workers of child complaints of child abuse have a different standard altogether?
No, they do not.
None at all.
That is the point of Doe versus Heck.
Oh, a good point.
That It's what is reasonable under a particular circumstance.
What I said is the definition of reasonable is the same. That is to say, what specific circumstances constitute reasonable behavior in one situation and not in another. From whom do you obtain consent for purposes of investigating child abuse?
The social worker could have and did obtain consent to do an interview, and I will actually read from the depositions.
Yes.
The deposition, in response to your first question, here is Ms. Griesbach's own deposition talking about her conversation with Ms. Reitz, the principal. I knew it was getting close to being dismissal time, so she said, well, can I sit in on the interview? Not the physical examination, the interview. And that's what the court found. This was a request to do an interview, not a physical examination. And here's Ms. Griesbach's specific language, and I said no. Generally, we interview in private. She said, I said no. Now, going to Ms. Revels Robinson's...
I got that before. I knew that. I read the thing before
okay.
you did. So we're even up there.
Now, under those circumstances, that was objectively unreasonable because Ms. Revels Robinson, who is Ms. Griesbach's supervisor, said this. She admitted that we have no written standards whatsoever. In her deposition, page 66, it's going to be recommended that the social worker, when possible, have another adult in the room. And that could be either another social worker, sometimes they do go out in twos, or if they were at a school setting, they could ask if a social worker, school social worker, a nurse, or the principal could identify someone to be part of that. So even under this amorphous standard that appellees are proposing, by the defendant's supervisor's own she's in charge of the agency there in Milwaukee. By her own testimony, what they did in
or back to my original question, from whom would they seek consent for the search?
They could seek consent from the principal, but in this again, we as the prevailing party below were not entitled to appeal. But I would argue that consent in this case could not even have come from the principal because the principal herself knew that if she were allowed to call the parents would not have extended their in-local parents' authority.
If they suspect the parents are the ones who are abusing the child, you think they have to seek permission of the parents to examine the child to find out whether there is such abuse?
No. If in fact there is reasonable basis to believe that the parents were doing the abuse, then I would think not. In this case, however, the evidence is, and Ms. Griesbach ignored that evidence, that the police had already been out. They had already investigated this. The parents said, sure, come on in. They talked to the kids. They interviewed. The police did a plenary, thorough investigation, and Ms. Griesbach simply ignored that. So in my view, if the consent means what consent means. Consent means what it says. If, in fact, the parents have the right to withhold consent, then the authorities would have to go to a different standard, probable cause, warrant, and so on. There are any number of avenues to obtain a lawful search. But in this case, the district court made exactly the right call. There is, in fact, an enormous distinction between searches and seizures. The Bureau turns the Fourth Amendment and qualified immunity on their heads. In 1996, this court said in U.S. versus Brown, following the Supreme Court in Horton versus California, quote, the Fourth Amendment protects at least two distinct constitutional interests, privacy and possession, from invasion by two distinct governmental encroachments, searches and seizures. A search compromises the individual interest in privacy. A seizure deprives the individual of dominion over his person or property. The Bureau's own expert drafter of practice standards testified at pages 26 and 22, quote, for me, a search of a child's body or looking at injuries is much more intrusive than asking questions, unquote. And that distinction, she testified, follows, quote, absolutely, unquote, from the, quote, legal requirements, unquote. So instead of acknowledging the social worker's duty to know the distinction between searches and seizures and obtain affirmative consent for each, the Bureau argues that it is the private citizen's duty to know the distinction and affirmatively deny the worker the authority to search a child's body, even when the worker does not ask for it. And that is the distinction at issue in this case, is the distinction which the district court properly zeroed in on. Again, instead of acknowledging the social worker's duty to know the distinction, that's what qualified immunity is all about, between searches and seizures, obtain affirmative consent for each, the Bureau argues that it is the private citizen's duty to know that distinction and affirmatively deny the worker the authority to search a child's body, even when the worker does not ask for it.
Your time has expired.
Thank you.
How, anything further?
Obviously, one of the points that are being addressed in this case is whether what the exchange was between the principal and the child welfare agent. And when Ms. Gressbach told the principal that they usually interview in private, Ms. Gressbach was not stating to the principal that she could not be present in the room, and that would be the only way in which the investigation could proceed. To say that you usually investigate in private is what Ms. Gressbach
said. Presence is not necessary, she said.
It's not necessary.
We usually do these in private. Is that what she said?
Correct.
That's the direct quote?
Yes.
She didn't say, I don't want you in here.
Right. And Ms. Gressbach is entitled to make that type of a statement to the principal. If the principal then wants to insist upon her presence in the room, then the principal can do so. If the principal is standing in the place of the parents at the time and is there to represent the interests of the children, the principal wants to be in that room.
If I recall correctly, your client told her that she had the legal right to do that. She had the legal right to investigate this matter. And that there was nothing the principal could do to prevent her from doing so.
I don't believe that's in the record, Your Honor, that she said that she has the, that there was nothing that the principal could do to prevent her from doing this investigation.
She said she had the legal right to do it the way she wanted to do it. My recollection is that's what she told the principal.
That may be part of the plaintiff's argument about...
No, I think the record, my recollection of the record is that's what happened. Am I wrong?
The probably was found in the
possibility occasionally hits me that I could be wrong. But I just want to know, do you think I'm wrong in my analysis of what happened and that's what the record showed?
Ms. Gressbach may have been asked questions similar to that during her deposition. She may have been asked about her impressions about her legal authority to act in the manner in which she did. But during the course of this conversation between the principal and Ms. Gressbach...
That's the one I'm talking about.
Ms. Gressbach did not say that I have the legal right to do this and you can't stop me. It was not anywhere near that type of a conversation. It was a cordial, friendly... Thank you.
All right, this case will be taken under advisement. Proceed.